Welcome to another edition of American History for the Modern Patriot. This is Dr. Susan Rempel. After listening to this podcast, please visit my website, www.bingoforpatriots.com, with more than 500 pages of documents, products, and information to motivate the modern patriot. What a better thing to talk about during the month of February than the subject of love. Who, might you ask, is the most romantic founding father? I believe I have the answer. Of course, I should actually phrase that question, which founding father wrote the most romantic love letters? After all, we cannot interview them or observe them with the objects of their affection. What we have to answer that question is the writings that remain available to us. Unfortunately, the hunt for the author of the most romantic love letters is also hampered by a custom of the time in which they lived. Although we live in an age where public figures, be it a president, an Academy Award winner, or the celeb of the moment on YouTube, are willing, if not exceedingly interested, in bearing their souls for profit or greater notoriety, the same could not be said for those in the political realm of the late 1700s. Martha Washington burned the letters that she exchanged with her husband George after his death. Thomas Jefferson did the same after the death of his wife Martha. Samuel Adams was well known for regularly burning his political correspondence and then flamboyantly throwing the ashes out the window so as to assure the personal safety of his friends. Consequently, we have limited access to the personal writings of the founders. But don't despair. There was one such couple who not only wrote to each other frequently and exchanged words of a highly romantic nature, but their writings have survived for us to review to this very day. In fact, the letters exchanged between John Adams and his wife Abigail are almost legendary. Their correspondence also gives us a unique window into all aspects of their lives. Unlike the Madisons, who were seldom separated, John and Abigail spent many years living apart from one another. The Adams courtship lasted several years due to the time that John spent advocating for his clients across the route of the court circuits. They were also separated for a six-week forced quarantine after John was inoculated against smallpox. Many of the letters of that time reference the need to smoke the correspondence. It was believed at that time that holding a letter over smoke would prevent the transmission of the disease from the writer to the recipient. After their marriage, John once again journeyed away from home to take part in the Continental Congress. He was separated from Abigail for lengthy periods of time between 1774 and 1777. In 1778, John Adams was appointed by the Continental Congress, along with Arthur Lee and Benjamin Franklin, to negotiate an alliance with France. He was taken aback when he found that Franklin had already negotiated the terms with France prior to his arrival. However, he remained in the country from February of 1778 until the summer months of 1779. He was sent home after he alienated himself from Franklin, and it was Franklin who was appointed to remain as the sole representative in France because of his popularity with both the French citizens and officials alike. He soon returned to Paris, without first discussing the matter with Abigail, to await the opportunity to negotiate the end of the American Revolution. It was during that period he was partially responsible for not only negotiating a treaty of amity and commerce with the Netherlands, but recognition of the United States by the Netherlands, as well as a substantial loan which greatly assisted the fledgling United States. It should be noted that he traveled to the Netherlands without the knowledge that his commission had been revoked by the Congress after he insulted the French foreign minister and continually remained at odds with Franklin. For much of this time, Abigail not only raised their two children, but managed the family farm, the household staff, and tenants on the Adams property as well. Adams once again rose from his political ashes when he, Abigail, and their two children relocated to Europe from 1784 until 1788, while John served as the United States Minister to the Court of St. James. The house where they lived, in Grosvenor Square, in London, from 1785 until 1788, still stands to this day. You might assume that they would also have lived together during John's time as Vice President and President. However, Abigail spent portions of that time in the family home in Quincy, Massachusetts. Needless to say, all of the time that they spent apart encouraged John and Abigail to correspond with one another. They left behind more than 1,000 letters that included their day-to-day concerns, opinions, humorous stories about themselves and others, advice to each other on all matters, views about politics and other political figures, and best of all, their feelings of love for one another. Although John was well known for lashing out at political foes and colleagues alike, and repeatedly damaged his political career because of his inability to hold his tongue, he was particularly adept at penning romantic prose to his beloved Abigail. He often referred to her as Diana, after the Roman goddess of the moon. In other letters, he referred to her as Dear Adorable or Miss Adorable. He sometimes referred to himself as the Spartan hero Lysander. The first written exchange we have between them, although undated, already notes John's intention to marry the 17-year-old Abigail. The letter was as follows. Dear Miss Jemima, I have taken the best advice on the subject of your billet, and I find you cannot compel me to pay unless I refuse marriage, which I never did and never will, but on the contrary, am ready to have you at any time. Yours, Jonathan. I hope Jemima's conscience has as good a memory as mine. The second preserved letter, written on October 4th, 1762, was even saucier. Miss Adorable, by the same token that the bearer hereof sat up with you last night, I hereby order you to give him as many kisses and as many hours of your company after 9 o'clock as he shall please to demand, and charge them to my account. This order, or requisition, call it which you will, is in consideration of a similar order upon Aurelia for the like favor, and I presume I have good right to draw upon you for the kisses, as I have given 2 or 3 millions at least. When one has been received, and of consequence the account between us is immensely in favor of yours. John Adams. Another quite romantic letter was written by Adams on February 14, 1763, while he was kept apart from his beloved Abigail due to his smallpox inoculation. The letter was as follows. Dear Madam, accidents are often more friendly to us than our own prudence. I intended to have been at Weymouth yesterday, but a storm prevented. Cruel, yet perhaps blessed storm. Cruel for detaining me from so much friendly, social company, and perhaps blessed to you, or me, or both, for keeping me at my distance. For every experimental philosopher knows that the steel and the magnet, or the glass and feather, will not fly together with more celerity than somebody and somebody when brought within striking distance, and itches, aches, agues, and repentance might be the consequences of a contact in present circumstances. Even the divines pronounce casuistically, I hear, unfit to be touched these 3 weeks. I mount this moment for that noisy, dirty town of Boston, where parade, pomp, nonsense, frippery, folly, foppery, luxury, politics, and the soul confounding wrangles of the law will give me the higher relish for spirit, taste, and sense at Weymouth next Sunday. After another lengthy separation, Adams wrote to Abigail on September 20th, 1764, "Oh, my dear girl, I thank heaven that another fortnight will restore you to me after so long a separation. My soul and body have both been thrown into disorder by your absence, and a month or two more would make me the most insufferable cynic in the world. I see nothing but faults, follies, frailties, and defects in any body lately. People have lost all their good properties, or I my justice, or discernment. But you, who have always softened and warmed my heart, shall restore my benevolence as well as my health and tranquility of mind. You shall polish and refine my sentiments of life and manners. Banish all the unsocial and ill-natured particles in my composition, and form me to that happy temper that can reconcile a quick discernment with a perfect candor. Believe me, now and ever, your faithful Lysander." And what of Abigail's letters to John? Although she never received a formal education, her love of reading gave her a considerable vocabulary. She unabashedly shared her well-thought-out opinions on all subjects with her beloved. Although she was not an educated and trained attorney, as was her husband, Abigail was equally adept at writing prose from the heart. Abigail Adams began many of her letters with the phrase, "My dearest friend." Initially, she adopted the pseudonym of Diana, given to her by the one whom she cherished. But after the birth of their first child, she began to refer to herself as Portia, who was the wife of Brutus, a famous Roman political figure. During their separation in the spring of 1764, Abigail wrote to John on April 12th. "My dearest friend, here I am, all alone in my chamber, a mere nun, I assure you. After professing myself thus, will it not be out of character to confess that my thoughts are often employed about Lysander? Out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh, and why not the mind thinketh? Received the packet you so generously bestowed upon me. To say I fasted after such an entertainment would be wronging my conscience and wounding truth. How kind is it in you, thus by frequent tokens of remembrance, to alleviate the pangs of absence. By this I am convinced that I am often in your thoughts, which is a satisfaction to me, notwithstanding you tell me that you sometimes view the dark side of your Diana, and there is no doubt you discover many spots which I rather wish were erased than concealed from you. Do not judge by this that your opinion is an indifferent thing to me. Were it so, I should look forward with a heavy heart. But it is far other ways, for I had rather stand fair there and be thought well of by Lysander than by the greater part of the world besides. I would fain hope that those faults which you discover proceed more from a wrong head than a bad heart. Ere long may I be connected with a friend from whose example I may form a more faultless conduct, and whose benevolent mind will lead him to pardon what he cannot amend. The nest of letters which you so undervalue were to me a much more welcome present than a nest of baskets, though every strand of those had been gold and silver. I do not estimate everything according to the price the world set upon it, but according to the value it is of to me. Thus, that which was cheapest to you, I look upon as highly valuable. You ask whether you shall send a history of the whole voyage, characters, conversations, etc. It is the very thing that I designed this evening to have requested of you, but you have prevented my asking by kindly offering it. You will greatly oblige me by it, and it will be no small amusement to me in my state of separation. Among the many who will visit, I expect Arpasia will be one. I want her character drawn by your pen. Aurelia says she appears most agreeable in her letters. I know you are a critical observer, and your judgment of people generally pleases me. Sometimes, you know, I think you too severe, and that you do not make quite so many allowances as human nature requires. But perhaps this may be owing to my unacquaintedness with the world. Your business naturally leads you to a nearer inspection of mankind, and to see the corruptions of the heart, which I believe you often find desperately wicked and deceitful. Methinks I have an abundance to say to you. What is next? Oh, that I should have been extremely glad to have seen you today. Last fast day, if you remember, we spent together. And why might we not this? Why, I can tell you we might, if we had been together, have been led into temptation. I don't mean to commit any evil, unless setting up late and thereby injuring our health may be called so. To that I could have submitted, without much remorse of conscience. That would have had but little weight with me, had you not bid me adieu the last time I saw you. The reflection of I that forenoon endured has been ever since sufficient to deter me from wishing to see you again, till you can come and go as you formerly used to. Abigail ended that letter with the following poem. O ye immortal powers that guard the just, watch round his head and soften the disease, banish all sorrow from his mind, becalm his soul with pleasing thoughts, and shew mankind that virtue is your care. Thus for Lysander prays his A. Smith. You might wonder if John and Abigail's strong emotional attachment to one another diminished over time. The answer is an emphatic no. Let's consider the following exchange. On April 11, 1776, Abigail wrote to John, I take my pen and write just as I can get time. My letters will be a strange mixture. I really am cumbered about many things and scarcely know which way to turn myself. I miss my partner and find myself unequal to the cares which fall upon me. I find it necessary to be the directress of our husbandry and farming. Hands are so scarce that I have not been able to procure one. And add to this that Isaac has been sick with a fever this fortnight. Not able to strick a stroke and a multiplicity of farming businesses pouring in upon us. In this dilemma, I have taken Belcher into pay, and must secure him for the season, as I know not what better course to steer. I hope in time to have the reputation of being as good a farmeress as my partner has of being a good statesman. To ask you anything about your return would, I suppose, be asking a question you cannot answer? After passing along information about activities of the British and colonists alike, as well as political news of which she thought her husband might take interest in, Abigail ended the letter as follows. Write me how you do this winter. I want to say many things I must omit. It is not fit to wake the soul by tender strokes of art, or to ruminate upon happiness we might enjoy, lest absence become intolerable. Adieu yours. I wish you would burn all my letters. On April 28, 1776, John's response to Abigail included the following excerpts. It gives me concern to think of the many cares you must have upon your mind. Am glad you have taken into pay, and that Isaac is well before now, I hope. Your reputation as a farmer, or anything else you undertake, I dare answer for. Your partner's character as a statesman is much more problematical. As to my return, I have not a thought of it. Journeys of such a length are tedious and expensive both of time and money, neither of which are my own. I hope to spend next Christmas where I did the last, and after that I hope to be relieved for by the time I have taken a pretty good trick at the helm, whether the vessel has been well steered or not. But if my countrymen should insist upon my serving them another year, they must let me bring my whole family with me. Indeed, I could keep house here, with my partner, 4 children, and 2 servants, as cheap as I maintain myself here with 2 horses and a servant at lodgings. Is there no way for 2 friendly souls to converse together, although the bodies are 400 miles off? Yes, by letter. But I want a better communication. I want to hear you think, or see your thoughts. The conclusion of your letter makes my heart throb, more than a cannonade would. You bid me burn your letters, but I must forget you first. It seems that we now have the answer as to why John chose not to burn their correspondence after Abigail's death. The couple's last known letters to one another came as John's term as president came to a close. Both letters were focused on the politics of the day, but continued to contain affection for one another. On February 16, 1801, John wrote to Abigail from the nation's capital, "The election will be decided this day in favor of Mr. Jefferson, and it is given at good authority. The burden upon me in nominating judges and counsels and other officers, in delivering over the furniture, in the ordinary business at the close of a session, and in preparing for my journey of 500 miles through the mire, is and will be very heavy. My time will be all taken up. I pray you to continue to write me. My anxiety for you is a very distressing addition to all my other labors. Our bishop gave us a good discourse yesterday, and everybody inquired after you. I was able to tell them you had arrived on Friday night at Baltimore. I sleep the better for having the shutters open, and all goes on well. I pray God to bless and preserve you." On February 21, 1801, Abigail wrote to John at the conclusion of her trip to Philadelphia. Her letter began, "My dear sir, I write to you once more from this city. The river is impassable and has prevented my sitting out. We hope, however, that the rain may clear it. I sent Townsend off today. I have heard some of the Democratic rejoicing, such as ringing bells and firing cannon. What an inconsistency," said a lady to me today. "The bells of Christ Church, ringing peals of rejoicing for an infidel president." At the end, she concluded her letter, "Adieu, my dear friend. I wish you well through the remainder of your political journey. I want to see the list of judges." The writings of John and Abigail Adams remind us of the humanity of our founding fathers. While some hold them out to be almost godlike, others portray them as flawed figures whose opinion should be dismissed. Yet the letters exchanged between John and Abigail allow us to see them for the unique and interesting individuals who they were. They were also human beings whose decisions were led by their principles. In 1782, Abigail Adams was asked if she would have objected to John's departure to Europe had she known how long they would be separated. Her response? "I feel a pleasure in being able to sacrifice my selfish passions to the general good." How different might our country be if we could all follow her example? Until next time, this is Dr. Susan Rempel encouraging you to remain motivated, vigilant, and engaged in the political process. Visit my website, www.bingoforpatriots.com, with more than 500 pages of documents, products, and information designed to motivate the modern patriot.